This is part two of a two-part podcast. There, it sounds like there's going to be a dozen people living up there through the winter. There's
somewhat through the winter. Some are going to leave to visit family or make money or
something
off-site for longer now that they're not restricted to the Ant Village Challenge rules.
Well, I think there's more than a dozen people up there now.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of get the impression, I wouldn't be surprised if at any point through the winter there's a dozen people up there. Mm-hmm. So, maybe. But we'll see. It's possible it might dip below a dozen. But part of what's happened is that we transitioned and the focus has been put on Ant Village and the Ant Village Challenge. And a lot of my projects slowed way down this year. So last year we had some stuff going on. We had a guy who said he could build this berm shed in 4 days. It's almost done. And by the time it does get done, I think it'll be a year and a half. But, you know, 98% of that time, it was just sitting down there not having anything going on with it. But Fred's been kind of wrapping up a couple of little bits on it. I'm going to guess, based on some of the conversations we've had, maybe in 3 or 4 days it might be finally done.
It's getting really close. I mean, as sometimes as, because now Kai has started helping me with it, as we're working on it, we find new problems that we didn't know needed to be fixed before.
So, like, right now, I know you guys are pulling a lot of the dirt off of the roof to replace some of the billboard material because it was put on there incorrectly.
Right. Some of the material was put on incorrectly, and then as the roof was done and redone a couple times, logs were shifted into different positions, so then their new position was actually causing a problem with the billboard material, like puncturing it or stretching it in the wrong area, or there's a new seam where there wasn't one before, and so it's yeah.
So pulling up the earthen material, laying down some fresh billboard material, and then recovering it. And then there's like a little bit on this side of it that needs to be filled in where we kind of had a drainage area. The drainage has been shifted around, so earthworks were done. And a hydrant was moved. And it's the finish line. We're pretty much just inches from the finish line.
Yeah, to cover that corner, the only thing left is to finish the electrical. We're going to run electrical into the berm shed from a line that's existing in the ground there. And so I had to get some parts in town, and that should be done tomorrow or today.
Okay. So a lot of my projects kind of went on hold, not only because of my ailment and some other crap, but while I was down and out, a lot of my income streams dried up because there was a lot of income I was bringing in, but they needed attention on a regular basis, and I wasn't able to do that when I was down. And so, damn, less cash to play with. And so then, you know, and then of course the ants, they're working on their ant plots. They're not like, I'm going to spend 5 months of my life working on Paul's projects. So, my stuff kind of idled. And then we had, like a PDC here this year. And, there was like.
And the appropriate technology course after it.
And there was one guy that was here that was kind of like, where the hell's all your chickens? You know, I read your chicken article. This is ridiculous that you don't currently have chickens. And it's kind of like, well, we've got one paddock built, and even that paddock is sad at the moment. But we've got some beautiful gates for the paddock. But we really need to have at least 4 paddocks to be able to raise chickens, and we need to have stuff growing in there to feed the chickens. So it's kind of like, all right, we need to move this stuff forward. And I'm physically not up to it. And at the same time, I need to continue to reestablish our cash flow stuff, you know, so get those DVDs moving. and you know, how do we got to do this and get anything moving forward? And it's kind of like, well, I don't have coin, but what I do have is deep root plots. And so then Fred and I and Jocelyn spent a lot of time going over a lot of different ideas. And with a lot of the gappers that come out, and they came out, and then it's like, okay, a gapper comes out, we're going to set you up with an ant. And a lot of them were like, we want more. We want a fuller day. Because, like, you know, with a lot of the ants, they'd go out and it's like, I'm going to help you all day today. And they would end up helping for maybe 3 or 4 hours, not the full day. And they're feeling like, you know, they want structure and they want, you know, to actually get their hands into some cob and then peel some logs and build some junk pole fence and you know, to do projects that need to be done and to work hard. And so Fred is going to run point and Kai is going to assist. And we've come up with this thing that we call permaculture boot camp. And a possible benefit is what we call boots to roots. So the idea is that at 7 a.m., everybody's fixing breakfast. At 7:50 a.m., everything's cleaned up. At 8 a.m., folks are on the job site for the morning. At noon, people break to make lunch. So you notice in this system, we did not hire a cook. So the boots are going to do their own cooking. And their boots are going to cook the meals together and clean up after the meals together. And so hopefully we don't have to have Dirty Mug CSI as part of this program. That hopefully Fred will, you know, do any Dirty Cup CSI that has to be done and make sure that everybody's doing a good job. And then, when Fred has to work on some other things, then, Kyle take over. But the key is that the days are going to be very structured. Everybody gets a bunk. Everybody gets access to the Fisher Price house and, we're going to provide food staples. So Fred pointed out that a vegan diet is a very cheap diet, which got my attention because of how much we were paying for gappers during the 20-month party. And so I kind of feel like the other thing I want to see is a lot more wildcrafting. I kind of feel like there wasn't very much wildcrafting before, unless you count huckleberries. During the 20-month party, there were a lot of trips made on what you might call company time, to go and get huckleberries. And, I kind of feel like, I'd like to see a lot more diversity in the wildcrafting than just huckleberries. But here's the boots to the roots part is that after being in permaculture boot camp for 18 months, then a person would get 1 acre of deep roots. So I kind of think a cool thing is that a lot of people want to do deep roots, but they feel like they don't have the skills. And I also believe that this should help build the skills. Now, I've also announced that if they, do 24 months, then their acre will have a tiny house, just a rough shell, not anything elaborate and fancy. And some hugelkultur gardens. So that's another possibility. And I think some people are still going to come and, they're going to just do it for a couple of weeks or 4 weeks or something like that. But it sounds like as of about 2 hours ago, because we talked about having 6 spots, for permaculture boot camp, and we just announced it a few days ago, and it's now officially full. There's no spots left. It's a waiting list. You know, we can explore to see if we can, you know, have more, like expand it from six to more later. But I think we're probably going to at least start with six and see how it goes. But these people start on February 4th. If somebody wants to come before February 4th, I suppose that they can come and do it. And then when February 4th rolls around, then we kick them out of the boot program.
One of the boots is coming in January, even though it doesn't start to February 4th. So.
Right.
Yeah.
So what we did is we set it up so that if you come on February 4th, then we reduced the gapper fee.
True. Yes.
And so that's another thing we're going to do is we're going to make it so that people who want to come out and be gappers, and for now the only option you'd have is to be a gapper for an aunt, unless you're like on the waiting list to be a boot, and then it's possible that you know, when an opening arises, then we can slide you in to the permaculture boot camp program. All right. So let's see.
Did you say where there's more information?
Oh, permies.com/boot. And that'll take you to the thread about that. And we're going to set up some other dates. So, like, I think that in April, May, and, like, each month, like the first Saturday of the month through the warmer months, people can come for a reduced price. Maybe they just want to get a tour. Maybe they want to, you know, be a gapper. Maybe they want to, you know, stay a couple of nights, or whatever. We'll explore. We'll look into that.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure if Fred has comments about this, and now I have forgotten what I had to say about it.
Ah.
But I think it should be a great program. Oh, I know what I wanted to say. The boot camp is like, there's, you know, software boot camps where you go learn stuff. Wow. That are not like a military boot camp. We are not trying to be a militia here.
Right.
And we tried to brainstorm other terms that don't imply military, but this is not a, you know, it's a structure and a learning opportunity. That's all that the boot camp implies. And Boots to Roots is kind of fun.
I don't mind some of the military connotation in there. But yeah, it's the idea that we're really stealing from here is that there are a lot of places where you can go and say, I'm going to go to Java boot camp, and it lasts 1 week. And so then you're going to, you know, for 50 hours during 1 week, you're going to build knowledge through experience, not through classroom time. Mm. And so there's tons of these boot camps for all kinds of things. But, I mean, it comes back to the idea of the military thing where you go for 3 months to boot camp. And they're going to run you ragged about 100 hours per week. And we're proposing 48 hours per week, where 40 hours is for projects, and 8 hours is for direct benefit to the current boots. And I think that a lot of our projects that we're going to have them working on are actually for future boots and future other people that are here. But it's all about, you know, getting all these permaculture things accomplished. I would say that if we got like a dozen people in a queue that were on a waiting list to come out here, that we might be able to find a way to take on another six. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see how it goes. I guess I'm just kind of thinking, like, this is also a great alternative to college. I mean, I keep hearing, I've been asked, I don't know how many times, we have a podcast about should you go to college. And it seems like we spent a good hour trying to talk about whether or not a person should go to college. But I kind of feel like a lot of people are thinking, like, I'm going to go to college for 4 years. It's going to cost me like 50 grand, 60 grand, something like that to pull it off. And then I got to go try and get a job and pay back all that money. And, or, you know, maybe they got it paid for by mom and dad or whatever, but should they go to college? And I do kind of think that there is benefits to going to college, but man, there's a lot of suck that way too. And I just kind of feel like for a lot of people in the permaculture world, they want to be able to build their own home and grow their own food and do, you know, learn the things that you need to learn to do when you live in the country. And, they would rather learn those things than learn the things that are at college. And I get that. And so maybe a person could do both, or maybe a person could just do this. Or maybe somebody can, you know, have a home here and be doing the GERT thing and then take an online college courses, possibly.
Yeah, look up FERD and GERT on Permies to understand what we keep referring to. That's the second time we referred to that.
Maybe we can make a podcast about that.
Did Fred want to say something about Boots to Roots?
Yeah, I was going to put the microphone in front of Fred, and then you wanted to add something. So,
I just wanted to point out that the whole permaculture boot camp is another experiment. It's like it's try the 100 things and see which two are going to work. So, it's. You know, we might have 6 people here and we're like, oh, this totally can work with more people. Let's add more on later. But like right now, yeah, we want to start with just 6 and then, you know, we might come up with some other plan later.
I think another thing is that if a person is 19 years old, and I think I've been asked this 20, 30 times, and I think Rand Pryor had something that he wrote about this. But a lot of people are in a point in their life, and we've also had some people out here who were 40 who were in this position, and they were kind of like, they don't know what they want to do with their life. All they know is where they are now is not it. And they want to find their thing. What's their thing? What's the thing that they're passionate about? And I kind of feel like this is a solution for that. And at the same time, I like the idea that a person could come out here, be part of the boot camp program, and then 3 weeks later go, this sucks, I want out, I'm out of here. They can go, and then there's somebody else in the waiting list who will then fill that spot. No problem. It just seems to me like a lot of people are in this position where they're told that they're supposed to do well in high school so they can go to college, and they spend a lot of time playing video games, and they just feel like everybody is awful, and they've got standards that they want other people to live by, but they don't feel they're even living by their own standards, and they're not even sure what those are, and they want to just get that experience. But most of all, I do feel like this helps to solve the problems we talked about at the beginning of this podcast, where it's kind of like, people want to go and do the homesteading thing, but they've never done it before. And rather than end up $200,000 missing from your life, that instead it's possible that you could come. And if it works, hey, you sort of get a free acre at the end. Which compared to the woofer program, you come and you do the exact same thing for the woofer program, but you don't get an acre at the end.
You get told to move on.
Yeah.
Well, and what I'm thinking are some additional benefits here is I imagine, I know it would be this way for me. I mean, Janet made the comment that Josh was such a perfectionist. That's why he took his posts out, peeled whole new posts and put brand new posts back in. And so he didn't have much farther done on his structure. And so that's why he helped Ben with the bear den instead of building a Wolfati or Ayler type structure. I think a lot of people don't have the carpentry skills or the timber framing or roundwood construction skills to really build the Wolfati of their dreams. And so it's hard to finish that wall because you know it's still kind of hard for you to do that carpentry or hard to do a period because you're still learning. You're learning as you go. And the Boots to Roots program gives you the chance to learn on projects for you, Paul, and the things you want built around here before they go out, before they have their acre and before they go build their acre. So I think that's an awesome progression for people to learn that stuff before they build their own. And there's the other thing I just wanted to mention too is in past podcasts, we referred to the 20-month party where it was just kind of miserable. It was the old version of the Gapper program that didn't work out with those people or those circumstances at that time. And when that was going on, you were spending hours and hours each day dealing with the people here and a lot of times dealing with conflict. And you very patiently unraveled and mitigated the conflict. With Ant Village, these are independent, more self-starting people who know that they can adult.
Yeah.
And they don't bring you into little petty conflicts like the first iteration of the Gapper program did. Like, we heard about after the fact that there was a Gapper here who had two Gappers that had issues with loaning each other money or something, and they had conflict over that. And we heard about it after they were gone.
Yeah. And it was like weeks later we heard about it. It was like, sweet!
You weren't called in to mediate or mitigate that conflict. When during the 20-month party, the people who were here at the time, that would have taken at least 18 hours out of your day. Out of your week, I mean, not your day.
Right.
18 hours out of your week. And I'm not exaggerating because I saw how many hours you had to spend discussing these types of things with the people who were here at the time. So Ant Village has been fucking awesome. Because they can adult.
Yeah. That it has been incredible. And then recently I said to somebody like, well, I can come up and have a look and give you some suggestions. And then somebody else was like, you do that? I thought we had to like not ever talk to you. And I was like, no, I thought I'd probably be going up at least once a month to, you know, give suggestions. You know, you're all welcome to flush it down the toilet and whatnot, but you know, and so anyway.
Well, a part of what happened too is you had this condition, and so everybody was super kind and considerate in trying not to bother us as you were recovering and stuff. So it kind of developed this whole, a little bit of a separate culture, which is not really what we intended.
Right.
And it's always been a little bit base camp versus the lab, a little bit, but not a versus thing, but it's fairly separate. And so the feast nights are one way we've tried to kind of bring that together a little bit more. And hopefully, you know, as there's less pressure with the challenge and stuff, that'll come together a little bit more going forward.
And I like
the
way
Boots to Roots too.
I like the way you put it, that the ants and the gappers that are here now are doing adulting really well. Cause it's like, it's been a cakewalk for me. It's rare that I have to get, in fact, the only time I ever hear about anything is through Fred. And then it's like, and it's usually a pretty small thing. And it's like easy to, it's like, wow, that was not much. That was easy. And so it's like very, very little that I have to deal with. Way better. And now, with the whole, boot camp program, well, Fred's in charge of all of that. They got a problem. They could take it to Fred. Well,
and that's where I was going with that is as Fred was saying, it's experimental. We'll start with six, you know, and we just never know how well brand new people can adult. So we don't know if six is going to be a huge handful or a breeze.
Right.
Or somewhere in between.
Right. Right. And it's possible that for the new boots that there might be a couple that have some skill already and can assume some leadership role. And so you're going to hate this, but I'd say you could appoint them like corporals. There, you know, corporal, Ed, take these six and go do that thing. And Corporal Fernando can take the other six and go do that other thing, and then Fred could take the day off. Easy peasy. So I think that the permaculture boot camp thing, obviously a big hit. The fact that it's already full, and it's like we just announced it a few days ago, I think is a pretty big deal. And there's a lot of other people that are talking about it. I'm sure that we'll have a waiting list going really soon now. why didn't we do this sooner? I'm also not sure if we'll do it forever. Like, how many plots are we willing to do? I've stated on the forums that if we had 12 people sign up in the beginning for February 4th, that I'd be willing to bet that two of them would end up getting a plot and that the other 10 would choose to move on. Or maybe we would ask them to move on, you know, but like only two of them would end up with a plot at the end. So I kind of feel like, you know, we could probably do more. But at this point in time, I am prepared to give all six of them a plot. What?
You just gave yourself a green stripe across your face
because I had
from your green pen.
The pen I had in my hand.
It's almost like the Ninja Turtle mask on one side.
It's not like a war stripe. How do I look, Fred? Do I look great? Do I look like I'm ready for battle?
Kind of like eyeshadow, but
kind of like eyeshadow, but it's
below, yeah.
Green and. I'm good. I'm glad I'm styling. I'm rocking it.
Your bruise is turning green. You know, it's aged a little.
Oh, I look tough. I look like I've been in a fight. Okay. All right. Very excited about the boot camp program. We'll see how it goes. I think other people are really excited about it. I think, Fred, do you have anything that you want to, like, are you going to call people maggots?
I don't think I'll be calling anybody maggots. No.
Will you be calling them something that's more vegan?
No, I don't think so.
I can't.
Yeah, I don't see it either. So it'll be a pretty gentle boot camp.
Yeah. I'm going to try and nurture people along and, you know, and hopefully they'll learn something along the way. And as time goes on, they'll need less and less instruction.
So now you've been managing most things here at Wheaton Laboratories for over a year now. You know, do you make people cry a lot?
If they're crying, it's they're not crying around me. So
okay, all right, they're rolling with it pretty good. It seems like you've built an awesome reputation here for, you know, getting things solved quickly, simply, easily, obviously, you know, without, because we've had some stuff in the past where it's like everything turned into great drama, and so it seems like your reputation is without the drama. So drama.
I hope so.
Yeah. That makes it easier for me. I know. All right. Next thing on the list is that we've come up with something for bounties, and this is something we're currently limiting to residents only, but it's, I think it's good to mention in a podcast real quick. It's related, sorta, kinda, and that is that, since I don't have coin to pay, for getting stuff done that needs to get done, because some of the ants still want to, get projects done, some of the residents, I should say, then, and I don't have coin to pay, we've come up with something that we're calling it FISH, F-Y-S-H, Farmstead Yield Standard Hour. And so then when a person completes a bounty for me, they'll get a certain number of fish. And then those fish can be applied for the ant plot rent or to a deep roots plot, renting one of our rigs, possibly the SEPA program. Some people have like, had friends over and it's like, hey, I want to have some friends over. Can I like rent Cooper Cabin, for when my family's over or something? Also for, renting the excavator or the tractor, usage of the shop. Maybe, trailers, to connect to like, the fire truck, certain tools, such as the sawmill. We've got lists and lists and lists of things that, there's a bunch of other stuff. Maybe event tickets like workshops or PDCs. And we're going to be moving into the space where we're opening up the Fisher-Price House again for people to spend more time here. And so fish could be used for some of that maybe. And then whatever else we might come up with in the future that seems fish worthy. Another thing is that, we're looking for a couple to spend a year, maybe a little bit more than a year in Allerton Abbey. And so we need somebody to, finish up the cob work that needs to be done there. One of the doors needs a little love and, it's a little bit of light carpentry, but mostly a lot of cob work. Then next summer, the thermal mass needs to be charged. And then the following winter, we need to do the annualized thermal inertia test. So I'd like for this to be a couple that will live in the Wofati, for this whole test period. And, because they would be a resident, they need to have listened to at least 200 podcasts. They don't have to pay any rent during this period, although the first thing they would have to do is whatever work is required to get, you know, to complete the structure. And I would imagine that that could be done in less than a month. But that would be a requirement from the beginning. They would need to be there through all of the test winter, not gone more than 2 or 3 days. And it used to be that I felt like I didn't feel the need to say this, but apparently it's turned into a big fucking issue. But in this particular case, through the winter, which I'm going to define as October 15th to March 15th, be gone 2 or 3 days is fine, but I mean, the results of this test are really important, and having somebody be in there for the entire winter is the big thing that I'm going to get in return from this. And so, I mean, if they're going to say, oh, I'm going to go away for Christmas for 2 days to visit family 100 miles away, that's fine. But being gone for a month? No way! That's not okay. So I'm looking for an unusual couple, I suppose. Somebody that's going to cook at least 2 meals a day in there, because I kind of feel like we're testing the annualized thermal inertia. Kind of need to know if normal people are living normally in there, which I think includes cooking, then is it going to be warm enough with the annualized thermal inertia? Maybe they can work from home, from inside of Allerton Abbey. No commuting stuff, nothing like that. For power, the Volkswagen is currently parked right there. That's got 750 watts of panels on it. Hopefully that'll be plenty. Oh, here's a big one. If you're going to be living in Allerton Abbey, it needs to be kept tour ready 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Visits would be unannounced. And so we've had some people here that have no problem with that. They'll stay in a structure and they will keep it tour ready 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. every day. And, you know, when we arrive to do a tour, we just give a shout out and they're like, yeah, come on in. And it's all great and it looks sharp. It's wonderful. And we've had some people that say, I'll keep it tour ready. And what they meant is that they're going to turn it into a shithole and you better not bring a tour by because it's going to look like hell. And so then we got to kick those guys out. This is part of the tour and you're not paying rent. This is the dealio.
A couple quick things on working from home. Like I said before, Paul and I would love to buy animal products or vegetables grown here. So there's an income opportunity there, that hasn't been fulfilled just yet. There is no Wi-Fi provided on the lab, though a lot of people bike back and forth, to base camp for the Wi-Fi or drive back and forth. That's an option if you have an online business. As we said, most of the other bounty work is going towards fish, but, oh shit, sorry, I just wanted to explain, you know, some work opportunities while you're here. People do use their data plans up on the lab to access the internet. Though inside of Wolfadi, it's so earth and bermed, it can't always get a good cell signal. You usually have to go outside, or we are finding that Verizon phone service is usually the best in this area.
I like the idea that eventually people have set things up so well that they can stay up on the lab for months at a time without leaving it. I do not want to get into a space where somebody is commuting to a job. And, you know, I do know that right now some people come down off of the lab to come here to base camp for reasons. And it's like, I don't think there's any way around that right now. But the idea that somebody would be commuting, no, that's not what we're looking for. All right. Anything else about fish or the Allerton Abbey thing?
No, I can't think.
Okay. I've got two more items left on the list. One is kind of a stupid thing, and that is a community printer. So I have a printer that I bought, I don't know, 9-10 years ago, and I have a horrible relationship with printers. I hate printers. I feel like they have to have some sort of driver installed, which is going to give you obnoxious ads. But now I've been using Linux for over a year, and so maybe
the print drivers don't usually give ads anymore.
Yeah, sure they do. Yeah, right.
Oh,
you know. But all right, I have this horrible relationship. But the thing is that we've had it in the office, and it seems like there have been people here for a workshop or as a gapper or whatever, and there's a certain sense of entitlement. Like, I need to print things, and so, oh, look, there's a printer, and so I'm going to print out this book that I just pirated off the internet, and it's 800 pages, but hey, there's a printer there. It doesn't cost me anything, And it's kind of like, I did the math at one point in time, and the ink costs were killing me at about $1 a page. Now I was printing out, most of what I printed out was like pictures, and that's going to use a lot of ink. But the idea that, because like just recently, just a couple of weeks ago, somebody printed out like 70 pages of something, and they left a note saying, hope that's okay. And I'm kind of thinking like, that's like $70.
Well, the note they left was, I'm sorry, more printed than I meant to, because there was an issue. You know, once in a while, the driver hangs up, and then it prints out gobbledygook as one line per page, and it'll print like 70 pages before you figure out how to turn off the printer and delete that cache of gobbledygook. So once in a while, it does that. And this person said, oh, and he felt so bad about all the paper. And 70 pages of paper is not that much of an expense. What it is the ink, because what you bought is a laser printer, not an inkjet printer. And to fill that puppy with ink is $300 at least, when I find the good deal on it. So it has these huge laser ink cartridges, one black, one each of the primary colors. So it's four ink cartridges. And if you're buying all four of those ink cartridges, it's $300 at least.
So I guess, and I've got a big thread about it, and it's kind of like a community issue, because it is something where it does seem like it's fair. If somebody's here for an event or somebody's here as a gapper, sometimes you just need a fucking printer to print a thing out, because it's like, okay, I got to print this thing out, I have to sign it, and then I have to fold it up and put it in another piece of paper with a stamp on it and give it to the postal service, and then you know, or something like that. There's a reason why you have to print something. It just happens, and it's reasonable to just say, oh, I need a printer. And so, I mean, going back to what we were talking about, how to solve the world's problems, like the people that are protesting, you know, about the tar sands, then it's kind of like, okay, the solution is, or one huge solution is community living. If you can get 20 people living under one roof. Generally, it becomes more luxuriant for all 20 people than if they were living on their own. And at the same time, their footprint on the planet is generally reduced by 60%. And so if you're going to talk about reducing our footprint for petroleum, so that way, because if we can reduce it 60% across the board, the tar sands suddenly become far too expensive. In fact, somebody said something about, if it wasn't for all the oil subsidies, the tar sands wouldn't pan out. They wouldn't even do it.
Probably.
But, so I think that's really the place where they should be protesting, is those subsidies. All right. And so it's kind of like, okay, how do we solve our community living problems? And this is one, this printer. And I kind of think that a better solution would be to come up with a printer that is cheaper to run and is just black and white. And although I do think that one of the things we've talked about many, many times is how to have more luxuriant living while sharing resources with others. And I think that having a color printer would be part of that. But I haven't solved that problem yet. It's an issue. It's something that needs to be resolved and figured out.
Well, we put labels everywhere. And unfortunately, like during the workshops in June, the PDC and the AT course, we didn't have labels on things. And people were printing so much, I finally took the printer cord away so it couldn't be used. And then someone tried putting paper in our laminating machine.
That's right.
Because they thought that was another printer.
It looked like it could be a printer.
And which ended up looking like a total fire hazard if you're trying to put just paper without the plastic sheet through a laminator, and let alone ruining things. But I used to have a lovely portable printer here. It was like a $400 portable printer that I could take on our road trips, and someone attached the wrong power cord to it and fried it. Because again, I had taken the power cords away so people wouldn't be using our printer, and they attached the wrong one, and then that $400 printer was toast. So labeling seems to help most of the time if people read the labels. Sometimes they just don't read it. But so my solution right now, with the remaining awesome printer you bought that has lasted a remarkably long time for printers, is I put a post-it just this morning right over the on and off button so that they have to lift the post-it to actually turn it on, where it says the ink for this costs about $300. So okay. They have to read that before they can flip the switch to turn the thing on.
So for printing pictures, it's probably now like 50 cents a page in ink. But for just printing regular normal stuff, it might be only 10 cents a page.
Yeah. And for most of the time, the accounting is not worth it for people to reimburse us. It's just not. It costs me more in my time to track something ridiculous like that, or to track where I've hidden the cord. So it's just, you know, what I'd actually love to do is do a class or create a video on, here's how you can do everything paperless.
Right.
Take a picture of it, you know. I mean, take a picture of something or figure out how to electronically sign a PDF or make an image signature that you can attach to an image document and send that, you know. There are ways to go paperless.
It would be great if people could get to the point where, you know, they only needed to print 3 or 4 pages per year. And then, you know, it makes sense to just have a central community printer for whatever that is. And maybe there can be like a little box or jar there where it's like, put for each page, put 50 cents in here or something. Maybe that's something for the future. And, you know, the only problem is that some of the people that we had for workshops or possibly as gappers in the past, then if it was an honor system thing like that, then people that do the decent thing get punished, and the people that don't put money in basically get rewarded. And that is a massive violation of my standards, and it really makes me angry. And
yeah, that's why we haven't put a jar out yet.
Yeah.
And I'm not in favor of putting a jar out at this stage of the game.
Yeah.
I like my little post-it for right now.
All right. Now we get to the last item, which is just Fred, do you have anything to add about printers?
No, but yeah, I think it makes sense that everyone living here doesn't need to own a printer.
Yeah, less crap.
Yeah.
Especially the ones that break after 3 months time runs up, you know, like the planned obsolescence.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay, the last item is just my own shit. And so the lateness of the DVD project led to me having three big debts. And I kind of, and this is something where it kind of comes up in a lot of different flavors, but we've had some people that are kind of like, oh, what does it matter if I take longer doing this? And so, the editing for the DVDs, originally was projected that we would be getting it done, in May of 2015. And that guy didn't, he quit. And then the next time it was supposed to be done in October, and it went long. And we've had other projects where somebody was going to get something done in 4 days, and then it went long, and then they quit. And it's like, I think that there's this one element that I need to point out that's probably the most obvious. It's the easiest to understand that I think most people don't know. So it's like, in the example of the DVD project, I had $45,000 set aside to pay for the editing, the printing, and the shipping. And when we got to the end of the year, if that money is not spent, then the IRS looks at that as income. And so then I have to pay taxes on it, which is about 15 grand. And it's kind of like, you know, but then the person that's taking a long time to do the editing, they don't care. And the person that is going to do the printing, they don't care. And the person that's going to do the shipping, they don't care. So then I end up just having to eat it because people are late. But in order to be able to get the whole project done, I had to take on three debts. And, because of the way that I am a broken person, I feel like it is folly to record a podcast when I still haven't paid these three debts. So Jocelyn is being very pushy and taking me away from the work that I'm trying to do to clear off these three debts in order to record podcasts and get back to this. And of course, there's the argument that's made that's like, that might help to bring in income, and so it's good to be able to go and record podcasts. And then just as we're sitting down, then Fred's telling me, like, why haven't you done all the things with the Patreon deal in order to, and it's like, because I've got to go and take those people and list them in the thing, and I haven't even done that yet, and I've got to focus on income that's bigger than, I don't know, what is it, $20 per podcast that I might possibly get if I just, you know, copy and paste some stuff. So, all right, there's Jocelyn's trying to say something, but you just have to wait. All right. So, obligation is poison, and I am trying to get past this obligation, which was necessary to meet a different obligation. And, Jocelyn's trying to get me to be less blamey. And it's like, I'm sorry. I'm a very blamey person. I'm extremely blamey. I even blame my cervical radiculopathy on a certain project. And so I'm very blamey about a lot of things. But at the same time, before we even came here, I said that if 100 people come and want to stay, we're going to end up sending 95 of them home. And so, you know, and each one will have a different reason. And while I'm going to be totally blamey about that, it is what it is. It's a known element that shit's going to happen, and we're going to move forward despite that. And that's just part of the deal. I have a hard time getting into a creative mode, which Jocelyn's been trying to get me back to, putting out podcasts, putting out videos, writing articles, things like that. And I have a hard time doing any of that while I have a debt. My time belongs to somebody else right now. and I need to clear that first. So, and with all my other incomes having shrunk up so much, it's proving to be more challenging than I expected, and I gotta finish that. So, there. Now you can say your thing.
Well, I think, yes, a lot of stress fed into your cervical radiculopathy. And I think you and I both still basically have day jobs on the computer, which even though we're here at the project, having the project here has kind of added to our day jobs at the computer because there's so much administration and management we do that is via computer related things. Like for me, paying the bills or, you know, doing the bookkeeping, that keeps me at the computer more, and that's part of how I contribute to the project here. So, and I think you and I both have a lifetime of workaholic tendencies that I keep trying to shift us into a healthier balance with some of that and getting away from the computer. The way I do that is I get in the kitchen to get away from the computer, but it's still not quite, you know, the kind of movement and physical activity that I think would be a healthier balance for us. And I have been nagging you pretty seriously to get back to more creative, soul-filling things because I think the money flows better, could flow better, when you're from a place of being soul-fulfilled instead of soul-drained. But it's hard, and it is, you do have some serious obligations, and I recognize that's really hard. And it's, we're not going to go from decades of being workaholics to not to working so much at the computer overnight. It's going to take while, and some things I used to think in my 20s that I could fix all my flaws with enough therapy and enough self-help books and enough diligence and good old try, but you know, sometimes we're just flawed, and you're better at admitting that than I am, you know. But it did take me decades to learn, you know, I'm not going to fix all my flaws. I'm still going to have flaws. I'll just try to mitigate them and keep improving them as best I can, but I'll die with lots of flaws. Yeah. That's the human condition. But I think there's a lot to that.
During the time that I put out all of those podcasts and videos, I did not have any debt. And so it's like my time was my own. I had residual income streams. I could do whatever I wanted to. Now my residual income streams go to paying people who are helping me with the empire and, you know,
paying for other overhead things.
And then
other things here.
Yeah. And so I'm paying to move things forward, and at the same time, and I kind of feel like it would be great to be able to get back to the point where we have a strong cash flow to be able to move all of our projects forward much faster. So it's kind of like a little bit of two birds, but really it makes no sense to do something frivolous while I have a debt. I need to get past the debt, and that's my weird shit. Fred, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I'll just say something that people should check out your Patreon account and pledge some money to you, even though you haven't updated it in quite a while with any of the new podcasts, and you might not for a while. So their name might not get into the thank yous, but maybe if enough people contribute and you see that figure is more than $20 for a podcast, you might actually do the work and post those updates.
That's true. And plus, when I set up that Patreon account, there's a way you can set it up where it's like you get the money every month, even if you do nothing. And I couldn't do that. It's like, so I set it up only if I, you know, do the thing at Patreon, which is like you produce a thing and then you push this button and you get $20 to come out. And it's like, I'm not going to push that button at $20. And so if nothing else, people could go put a pledge up on Patreon for some crazy amount of money. And I probably won't push the button. And so it doesn't cost them anything. I do kind of wonder if the Patreon thing might be something to work out in the end, but, We'll see how it goes.
It seems to be working for Jesse. I think he's somewhere close to 100 for a video, right?
Yeah, that's cool. I saw somebody who's got like they put out videos and they get something like $6,000 every video, and I'm kind of thinking like, fuck, for $6,000, I'll go crank out a video right now. I'll do it today.
I'm guessing they're putting more work into the Patreon advertising end of it than you
That's I think there's a lot of truth to that.
I mean, probably most of your listeners didn't even know you had a Patreon account. They might have just slipped by them.
Yeah, well, it was kind of new, and I tried it. I mean, I'd had I don't know how many people, like 12 people, all saying I should do it, and so I went and I set it up, and then it's got like $24 per thing, and it's kind of like, well, that's not very, very much. I thought it might start off at a bigger number, like maybe $300. And it's like, because it's only $24, I'm kind of like, not really, you know, this doesn't seem like something that's kind of turning out. So I just kind of let it go. But later, I think I could get back into trying it out and trying to see if it'll go. I mean, we've got tons of stuff here to podcast about, tons of stuff here to make videos about, tons of stuff here to write about, make new DVDs, to do everything about. There's so much happening here. The tour now is a good 3 hours. Easy. Mm-hmm. And there's so much more to say about each of the things. So it's kind of like content is going to be easy. It's just taking the time to make the video or make the podcast is what's going to be challenging.
You had one other thing on the list.
Oh, there is one other thing on the list. And so what? What are we doing? You're just showing me a picture of my face?
To see the green.
Oh, so I can see the green. Oh, look at that. I did. I drew on my face pretty good. Not bad without a mirror. All right. Got a big green racing stripe on my face. Okay, more recently there was something where, and Jocelyn has done a lot of the work for this already, and it's there was some discussion of like, okay, a lot of people in Montana heat their homes with like 6 cords of wood. If you're going to heat your home with 1/10 of wood, that suggests a little over half a cord. And then I replied to say that it seems like about a half a cord to heat this home in the winter is about right. And so when I think about how much wood we've used, how much heat we've gotten, et cetera, yeah, about half a cord. Because we've got this little kind of a wood rack thing. It's actually a bookshelf, but we fill it with wood. and so I did the math, and it's like, okay, if we fill it 6 times, that's a half a cord of wood. And it seems like that's about what it's been taking each winter. And so now we are very carefully measuring it this winter and to see how much wood. Is it comfy in here right now?
It was actually kind of warm when I came in, but not, you know, I took off my coat and I'm quite comfy.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we're in t-shirts. I usually wear a sweater in the house in the wintertime, but that was too warm today.
Yeah, I'm wearing my hot pants right now and I am way too warm. I'm sweating.
Yeah.
So I need to take down a layer. But all right, we will carefully measure. And we went, so the day before yesterday we had a fire, and it's been getting below freezing each night. And yesterday it was like kind of on the edge, like, should we build a fire? So we ended up not building a fire yesterday. And then this morning, and yesterday at one point it was 66, but I think it warmed up as the day got to like 50 outside, then I think it warmed up more inside, because the mass from the rocket mass heater is still throwing off heat. And so as it warms up outside, even if it doesn't get to 70, I think it got to 70 inside here yesterday, even though we didn't have a fire. And then this morning I looked at the thermometer. I'm thinking, I definitely need to build a fire. And it was 61 inside. And so I did. I built a fire, and we used maybe a cubic foot of wood.
So there's a thread in the Wheaton Labs forum on this experiment, we'll be tracking how much wood we use. And Paul took a picture of these, this shelf. It was actually built for cubbies for when we were sharing this house with 8 to 15 people. They needed little cubbies to store their shower stuff or some of their personal items. So that's what this was for. Mm. And now we're using it for wood. But there's a thread about that. And also, if you go to the Wheaton Laboratories Forum on permies.com, we added some links, right, quick links right at the top to go to like a summary of everything about here, the Gapper program, boots. Is Boots to Roots a quick link at the top?
I don't know.
Anyway, there's some easier ways to move around the information now.
It doesn't matter. Enough people are finding it that it's full.
True.
So.
True.
Yeah. You'll have to actually like use Google or look, maybe, you know. It's kind of like it's your test number one. Can you find the thread? Do you know how to use Google? If you can't use Google, then fuck off. We don't want you either. So, yeah, it's a bit of a test, I suppose, to be able to get here. So, all right, we're testing, we're measuring, we're being very, very careful and cautious. We want to be comfortable all winter, but yet how much wood do we actually use? And this is a pebble-style rocket mass heater, so it's going to be probably about 20% less efficient than a regular cob-style. Plus, the design of this particular rocket mass heater is to make it so it's a little bit more Gilligan-friendly, meaning that it's less efficient that way also. So somebody could build a rocket mass heater that's more efficient than this one and use even less wood in this space than what we're about to use. So I think that if we come in at less than a cord, we did great. And if we come in at under half a cord, we did super freaky, amazing, awesome. So, all right. Anything else to add to this podcast?
No.
No.
No, that was a long and thorough one.
If you like this sort of thing, come on out to the forums at permies.com, where we talk about boot camp, homesteading, and permaculture all the time.